This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. This afternoon, a discussion about body image and eating disorders. 1 in 4 young girls will have an eating disorder by the end of their teen years. Already, 24 million people in the U.S. suffer from bulimia, anorexia, and other eating disorders. What can be done to fight such destructive behavior? What is influencing these youngsters? Be part of the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk at WVXU.org, or posting on Facebook or Twitter. And joining me in the studio for this conversation this afternoon are Stacy Sims, founder of the True Body Project, psychologist and author Ann Carney Cook with the Cincinnati Psychotherapy Institute, University of Cincinnati Department of Communications Associate Professor Stephen Haas, and later Sarah Young, who is in recovery from a years-long battle with eating disorders, will be joining us on the phone. Thank you all for being here on Cincinnati Edition today.
Great
to be here.
Thank you.
Well, Stacy, I'd like to begin with you, since it was the True Body Project that inspired today's topic. What is the True Body Project, and how did you get started in this?
The True Body Project started in 2005, and it started in partnership with Artworks. And I had the belief that it was hard enough when I was a kid to grow up and feel a sense of wellness and a real understanding of who I was. And the more girls I talked to, it seemed that today's girls are under extraordinary pressure from how they look to over-sexualization. It just didn't surprise me that girls were having eating disorders, were self-harming because of the hyper-pressure that they're under today. So I created a curriculum, sort of a rite of passage curriculum that included writing prompts and looking at the body in art, and it included movement. So really restoring what I call the felt sense and an ability to understand one's own body through movement and what it can do versus the aesthetic value of it. So that's what we started in 2005.
And it's taken on quite a life of its own. You've been working with quite a few girls, and it's education not only here in our community but around the country.
Yes, I've had the good fortune to work across the USA and internationally with girls who have different issues. So poverty and sex trafficking and things like that create a different kind of disconnect from one's body, but the curriculum is applicable to cross-cultural traumas. And then we have lots of trainers now, so we can work in schools here with even younger girls to fourth grade. So we are growing in a way that is really exciting to me, but it always saddens me when I realize that the more information we have about these topics, we don't seem to get smarter about them. So I'm hoping that I can learn a lot from my colleagues here today about what everybody's doing to begin to fight the sort of collective delusion we have about what's an adequate body type. It makes no sense.
And you mentioned in some of the materials I was preparing for the show today that you make a statement. Many people ask, do you work with at-risk girls? And we contend all girls are at risk, just differently at risk.
Absolutely. And it just sort of depends on the cultural ecology ecosystem where you grow up. So we work with, girls, and I don't want to generalize, but certain girls are going to be more at risk for self-harm in different ways than other girls are at risk for self-harm. It just shapeshifts, and I'm sure Anne can speak to this in her work. I'm sure we can all speak to this. It's really hard to have a full, integrated sense of self in today's contemporary culture.
Dr. Ann Carney Cook, you've been treating eating disorders for quite some time. I have thrown around a couple of statistics. 1 in 4 girls will have an eating disorder. I know there are other statistics that are just as shocking. But talk about the extent of this issue, these problems here in our community and in the country.
Okay. Well, first of all, I just think it's amazing what Stacy is doing, because I think that kind of prevention work really can help young girls, because they're bombarded with images that are not realistic. And also they're really still taught subtly and not so subtly the way that they can gain control is through their beauty, their body. And so a lot of girls who feel overwhelmed with what's going on, with the pressures of having to be super girls, great students, great athletes, doing everything, and maybe things are going on in their family, problems in the marriage or depression, whatever. It's like they don't feel they can control that, but they feel like if I, you know, cut up my food and don't eat much of it and push it under the lettuce, then I will be in control. And when they get on the scale and it says, you know, I've lost weight, I'm in control. So what I see a lot is very unrealistic body ideals in the country, and also girls thinking this is the way I can gain control. It's through my body. But the problem is, like anything, it's really not helping them gain control, so they have to keep losing more and more weight.
Well, the Cincinnati Psychotherapy Institute, I was reading, has been treating eating disorders for over 30 years. Is it continuing to be a growing problem, or, you know, has it plateaued?
No, there's an increase in anorexia, bulimia, and compulsive overeating at this point. So it is growing. And in some of the research I've done, you know, I have found that during the day, females have an average 13 negative thoughts about their body. And thoughts like, you know, you're a fat pig, you're so wrinkly, and you have a muffin top, no one will ever be interested in you. Thoughts that if you just listen to them, you think, oh, that must be an abusive boyfriend, or it must be an abusive person, or some terrible website. But in fact, these are the kind of words women are saying. And we know that when you say these things, it affects your body image, it affects your mind and your mood. And so this takes up a lot of energy in the female psyche that we could be doing more creative things with.
That's Dr. Ann Carney Cook talking about eating disorders. I'm sorry, I've lost my voice for a second. And that's what we're discussing on Cincinnati Edition today. You can join the discussion at 419-71. I'm sorry, 00-419-7100. Samantha via Facebook says, is the problem due to girls hearing other girls and women they know tearing down others about their shape or weight? And you just kind of touched on that, Doctor.
Well, I think what happens is that, you know, when you're not encouraged to develop your whole self, your soul, your spirit, to figure out, you know, who am I in adolescence has been replaced with what should I look like? Instead of asking questions like, what do I think about the war? What do I think about this candidate? What are my values? It's been replaced with, what should I look like? I look at the celebrities. They're all thin. They're all this. And so I think what happens is that when that's going on, instead of connecting with other girls and encouraging each other, there can be, when you feel insecure about your own body, one way you feel better is putting someone else down, but it doesn't work. I mean, what really works is, and we know from data, that when you are being positive to someone about their body or themselves, not only do they get some good feeling chemicals moving through their body, so do you. It affects your biology and brain.
So sometimes it is talking, we talk about the actresses, what these young girls are seeing in the media and the like, but they're also hearing it at home. I was reading about how a mother's approach to their own body image can be picked up by daughters as well, and that can have an effect, where they hear just each day as mom's getting dressed, you know, in a daughter's eyes, mom is the most beautiful person in the world. And that's a slight exaggeration, but you understand what I'm trying to say. But they hear their little organic tape recorders, who are also hearing this and processing those words they're hearing around the house too.
Right. And I think what happens is, often by the time a girl's a teenager, her mother is in midlife, and there's a lot of physiological changes taking place in her body. And even women at midlife, you know, when I grew up at midlife, it was expected that, you know, if you had children or just as you age, you're going to have some extra pounds in the middle of your body, you're going to be a little thicker, where now there's so much pressure for even midlife women to be so thin. And that's also been shown. We have an increase in eating disorders in midlife women. And so, again, it's a control issue there, too. Often they're going through a divorce, or they feel like maybe they're worried about their marriage, or they're worried if they can keep their job. And so it's almost like, I can't control all that, but if I, you know, exercise for 2 hours and don't eat much, then I'm in control. But again, it's not real control. It's not the control that makes you feel vibrant and effective in the world.
Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, talking about body images and eating disorders. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. Bernadine from Hyde Park, you're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, I'd like to thank you so much for having this discussion. And I am a counselor and also a psych nurse who has worked with eating disordered girls at Cincinnati Children's Adolescent Center, actually. And it is correct that it is about control. Many times girls with eating disorders are cutting or trying to control their family. There's craziness going on. And the more the people concentrate on the symptoms, which would be the anorexia or the cutting, the more they feel they have that control, because people are concentrating on the system, on the symptom. The best way to really help girls like this is to help them become empowered, and also help them give a sense of control of their life in another way, you know, empower them to be powerful in their life. But one of the most important things is to have good relationships. Very often their relationships with their parents are terrible. Their parents are trying to control them. And adults feel this too. They have bad relationships. And really, when people are connected with other people in loving ways, they don't need to do this kind of behavior. They can get over it much easier. But I will say that aside from just being personal, it is our culture. It's the whole society. And fighting, being self-empowered as a woman is really counterculture. I mean, it really is counter to our culture. So it's a difficult place to be.
Oh, thank you, Bernadine, for those thoughts. And any reaction here in the studio? You want to respond to that? And I wanted to ask is, you know, what are the root causes of these eating disorders? I mean, is it really psychological? And does it stem from relationship issues?
Well, there's definitely a biological basis to this, that when you look at the research that often if someone is struggling with an eating disorder, they have a parent, they have an aunt, they have somebody else who has struggled with it. But I really agree with what you said, because I think most disorders, mental struggles, are attachment disorders. And I think what happens is if you don't feel that connected to other people, which is where the real good feelings come, not from, you know, getting yourself to be a size 5 or 2 or 6, whatever. But if you don't feel that connected to people, I think you're more at risk to these promises of, you know, if you look this certain way, men will be attracted to you. If you, you know, look this certain way, you'll be successful. And so I feel like a lot of my work is helping people give up being, I have to be the thinnest at the school so people will value me, or I have to be the thinnest out of my girlfriends. That's what makes me feel good too. I am really going to open up and be vulnerable and empathetic with friends, and really put a spotlight on my relationships and get the rich energy that comes from that. And then you don't have to be the perfect person, because you're getting great energy in your life from that.
And how does that tie into the True Body Project, Stacey? Because you talk about preventative. She's, you know, working with folks that have the issues already, but the True Body Project, that's trying to prevent those things from happening.
It is preventative, and we also do work with a lot of girls and women who are already in the spectrum of some sort of disordered eating or self-harming behavior. And what we do is we provide gateways, really simple activities to start to activate different bodily realities of wellness. And those include exploration, play, sociability. We help through sometimes just playful games and weight balancing, that both the mind and the body engage in activities that have gotten left out. There's the thought in integrative therapy that there's 8 action systems of the body. So defensive, attachment, caregiving, exploration, play, sociability, sexuality, and energy regulation. And when we get off kilter, what happens is we stay in defensive attachment energy regulation. So the True Body Project provides writing prompts, easy movement activities for you to start to have an experience of these different parts of wellness that are embodied. So it's not just I want to think about being different, but I become different through actions.
Stacey Sims, the founder of the True Body Project, also here in the studio with me is Dr. Ann Carney Cook, who has been treating eating disorders for some time at the Cincinnati Psychotherapy Institute. And after a break, I'll be talking with Sarah Young, who is in recovery from a years-long battle with eating disorders. And later, the University of Cincinnati Department of Communications Associate Professor Stephen Haas will join me to talk about online negative enabling support groups. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purzell, discussing body image and eating disorders in young girls this afternoon. Join the discussion by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk at WVXU.org, or posting on Facebook or Twitter. On the phone now is Sarah Young, who's in recovery from a 14-year-long battle with eating disorders and other mental illnesses. She is now a great advocate for trying to find solutions to these issues. Sarah Young, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Great to be here.
Well, I want to ask, to begin with, you call this the most lethal of mental illnesses. Explain that, please.
Yeah, I think from the experts can definitely chime in on this, but from a statistics perspective, I think, you know, a lot of studies have found that anorexia, specifically, the psychiatric disorder with the highest mortality rate. And I think, you know, relating to eating disorders, a lot of the physical damages is definitely, you know, very lethal as well.
And you are, you've been battling or had been battling these various eating disorders and other mental illnesses for a while. And I was reading in your background, you were talking about having a family with a history of mental illness, but it was something that wasn't talked about. And did that help compound the issues that you were facing as a young girl?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges I faced was around the stigma, right? So I struggled for 14 years or so since I was 14. And I think, you know, at times throughout that journey, you know, a lot of the time I actually felt like I didn't need help. I felt like I was fine. Everything was under control. But I think at times when I felt like, oh, maybe I need help, part of me was very afraid, and stigma is definitely part of it, especially in the Asian community, where, you know, mental illnesses are not considered real sometimes. It's something that you get over. So I think, you know, that was definitely a big area for me to reach out and get help, you know, when I felt like I might need treatment. But I think the other piece that's really dangerous is that denial is such a big piece of eating disorder that a lot of times I just didn't have the insight or really realize that I was really sick and needed help.
Well, Dr. Stacey, as you hear Sarah discussing her situation, do you run into that in your work and finding that there is a lot of denial when it comes to these eating disorders and these body image issues?
I absolutely do, and I'm a recovering alcoholic, so I have great empathy for the power of denial, because as my behavior got ridiculous and so clear to anyone else that I had a problem, it was unclear to me. So I really can relate to how when the body-mind system starts to go offline, how compelling the lie of your life can be. And so I really get it.
Yeah, I think that whole idea that so many people, like a lot of times eating disorders will be, again, there's usually a biological vulnerability. There's usually a trigger. Something's happened that the person feels out of control. And then they start losing weight. And in the the reaction from everyone around them at first is often very positive. And so there's a lot of reinforcement for their dieting and losing weight. And often, again, there's a function the eating disorder serves for them. It does something for them that they don't feel they can do themselves. That's why in treatment it's so important. Like, I'm always teaching skills. Like, if you feel you don't know how to negotiate relationships, and the one way to avoid that is to have your whole life, your whole relationships with your body, and focusing on everything you eat and every pound you have versus getting out there and getting close to people. So you'll be learning skills because as the person keeps losing weight, they often begin to get more and more excited. They get more withdrawn, but they feel more in control. And we are in a culture that has normalized this in many ways. And you'll see, just women of power, you have political candidates when they'll talk about, whether it's Sarah Palin or Hillary Clinton, about what they're wearing, about their weight, all that kind of stuff. So it is easy to stay in denial. But one of the first things I try to work with patients is figure out, what is the function of this eating disorder for you? I know it works for you, and that's why you don't want to be here and do this work. But what is it? And once we figure out what it's doing for them, we can then teach skills on how they don't need to have the eating disorder.
Well, Sarah, at what point did you know that you needed help? I mean, was there a specific trigger? You discuss, seemingly being well off in life, having two Ivy League degrees and a nice condo and a fancy car, you couldn't be sick. When did you notice that you did or recognize that you did need help, and what triggered that?
I think, a lot of people talk about hitting rock bottom right before you need to get help. I think, for 14 years, it kind of, worked well enough for me. I felt like, so I really, didn't have the trigger, as you mentioned, to get it. But I think when I was 27, actually living in Cincinnati at the time, a lot of changes in my life, moved to Cincinnati, changed to a new job, new company, broke out with my boyfriend, a whole bunch of stuff. A lot of times when changes were happening, I think it was mentioned earlier that control is a piece of it, right? I was trying to, figure out my life, and eating disorders was one of the ways that I was trying to find that control or feel a sense of that, I'm in control of things. So I was using my symptoms very aggressively. It was, totally consuming my life. That's all I was thinking about. And then at the same time, I was very depressed and suicidal at the same time, in addition to using the behaviors really aggressively, that my life was really in danger. And that's when I finally went into treatment. I was actually in inpatient treatment for 4 months, and that's where I started to learn more about the coping skills, really investigating the underlying issues, self-esteem, et cetera, that some of our experts today have talked about.
Well, you talk about access to treatment as a matter of life or death, in your opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, treatment definitely saved my life. Without treatment, I don't think I'll be here today. I was very fortunate to work for a company that offered great health insurance to cover my entire state. I was actually inpatient for almost 5 months. That's what I needed medically. And then afterwards, I still had ongoing treatment after I went home to make sure I maintain and recover. And I've been in recovery for 7 years now. And I think, through my journey, I definitely have seen a lot of my friends, a lot of people that don't have access to treatment. And a lot of times it's really a life or death. Without treatment, people simply, die, unfortunately, a lot of times.
Sarah Young, who is in recovery from a 14-year-long battle with eating disorders and other mental illnesses. We're talking body image and eating disorders on Cincinnati Edition here on 91.7 WVXU. 513-419-7100 is the number to call to be part of the discussion. And I want to ask Doctor and then Stacey, you too, what kind of myths and other things are there out there that deter people from getting help until, as Sarah said, that they hit rock bottom? I mean, what are there? Do you find that there are things that prevent some of these young women from seeking help?
Well, again, I think this was talked about earlier, denial, you know, like there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just losing some weight. Also, I think shame. I think there's a great feeling. There's a terrible feeling of shame that I hear patients talk about, like, what's wrong with me? Why did I end up doing this? I don't measure up. The behaviors are gross. You know, I'll have bulimic patients say, this is gross. Midlife women might say, this is ridiculous. This is a disorder for, you know, teenagers. How do I have anorexia and I'm 55? But I think shame, it's very, you know, often, you know, we don't talk as much about that. There's a lot of shame and embarrassment of, you know, like I'm just listening to two Ivy League degrees, so many things that you worked so hard for and did well, and then you have the secret about yourself, and you don't feel that people will support you or love you or accept you, and because of it. So, yeah.
Well, I want to bring Stephen Haas into the conversation now. Stephen is with the University of Cincinnati Department of Communications, an associate professor there, but has done a study on pro-anorexia online negative enabling support groups. It's a mouthful, Stephen, but this is actually a group of girls who are getting together and promoting anorexic behavior.
That's right. In fact, in line with a lot of the things we've been talking about, what we saw in studying websites and online forums and personal web pages was that a lot of these young women are going online and seeking out like-minded others that you would not be easily able to find in the offline world. And so a lot of characteristics of the internet that we don't think about are very negative, and that it's easy to find other anorexics online who will support the idea that anorexia is a lifestyle to them. It is, they do not view it as a disease. They do not view a need for recovery from it. And so through these websites, they're actually exchanging social support that encourages these behaviors amongst each other.
I can only imagine that this must get pretty ugly, because the internet can get pretty ugly because people have that anonymity and ability to say whatever they want without any consequences. And I can just imagine a group of young girls getting together to encourage bad behavior.
That's right.
It's horrible.
In fact, anonymity is one of the large pieces that we have seen in our research, because anonymity allows for extreme communities to arise. And there is you can say whatever you want, and there is no one to challenge you because these are like-minded people. And so here we see young women exchanging ideas about anorexia. And the other participants are not saying, oh, no, you should try to gain some weight. They're saying, yeah, you're right. You should continue what you're doing. And so it just intensifies. We call it an intensification loop, that it just continues to spiral.
Well, then it becomes also competitive, correct?
Yes.
Where it becomes – it's not just – it becomes not a secret, but a something to win.
That's right. In fact, we saw women establishing their identities around this, sort of daily diaries of, here's what I'm doing, what are you doing? And so both competition and also support, like, hey, we can do this together. And it's really opposite from what we think of as traditional social support groups, which is why we came up with this new term, online negative enabling support groups, because we really believe this is a new type of social support group.
So promoting negative health behaviors rather than the positive ones. And I guess this makes your work go upstream a little bit, Doctor, in the way of – because I think I read somewhere where you say really group discussions for these eating disorders are one of the most effective forms of treatment.
Right. Yeah. I actually lead groups in my office in Montgomery, eating disorders groups, but also groups for females who just have a negative body image. They don't even have an eating disorder, but they want to improve their body image. And I just finished an experiment where where we looked at the power of suggestion and keeping track of your behaviors at each day to on a woman's perception of her own body. And so basically what we found is that as the women as the women began to keep track each day of choices they made to feel good about their body and included themselves in the definition of beauty, that they ended up feeling much better about their body pre-experiment and post. Things were happening like instead of looking on the outside like a scale or comparing themselves to others, what they started to do is look at the each day the choices they made, and that would determine how they felt. If they felt good about their body, not what the scale said, not. And another thing that came that was amazing was that the women reported feeling more vibrant because they stopped taking so much time. Like they've stopped, you know, trying on 5 outfits before they went out. One African-American woman, she used to take an hour and a half to straighten her hair. She stopped. She just thought, I'm so tired of this. It takes an hour and a half out of my day. I work. I have kids. I would rather spend that time with my kids. So you started to see that as the compass of direction was inside of them, where they were keeping track of choices they made each day to feel good about their body, not looking at scales, not comparing, they felt a lot more vitality and felt much better about their body.
Dr. Ann Carney Cook, who is here along with Stacy Sims and Stephen Haas, talking about body image and eating disorders on Cincinnati Edition, 513-419-7100. We will take a call from a mother of two girls after a short break here on Cincinnati Edition. Cincinnati Edition on 91.7. I'm Mark Purcell, discussing body image and eating disorders in young girls this afternoon. 513-419-7100, the number you can call with a question or comment, or email us, talk@wvxu.org. In the studio with me are Stacy Sims, founder of the True Body Project, psychologist and author Ann Carney Cook with the Cincinnati Psychotherapy Institute, and Stephen Haas from the University of Cincinnati Department of Communications. And I'll go back to you, Stephen, in this online negative enabling support groups, where these are support groups supporting negative health behaviors rather than positive. Is this just the growing influence of the internet? And is that role, that an anonymous role, did you find in these communications, make those communications a little bit harder to take?
Well, I think what we're seeing is, I mean, some of these groups have always existed. There's always been clandestine groups that have gotten together. But the internet is now making the access so much easier and anytime, anywhere. And what's really sad with some of these young women is that their families are totally unaware that they are going online and seeking out these similar others. And so that is one of the goals of our research, is to try to raise awareness of family members. Because one of the major things we saw is that a lot of these women are considering these other females online to be closer to them than their actual family and friends in their offline world, because these online people understand them. Their family doesn't understand. And so it's really creating a shift in where they're placing their loyalties and their identities.
513-419-7155. Wendy from Loveland, you're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm a mom of three, and I have two younger daughters, ages 5.5 and 7. And listening to your conversation, a couple of months ago, I was in a changing room, and I heard two girls, I would say between the ages of 10 and 12. And what got my attention is when the girl said she needed to go on a diet to look better, just like my mom does. I don't want people to think I'm fat. As a mother, it broke my heart. So I have a parenting blog that conversation about how mothers, sisters, aunts, grandmothers, they can have major influences on them. And us moms need to think about what message we're sending to our daughter. We're constantly saying, I need to go on a diet. I need to get this surgery. I need to get that surgery. But we tell our daughters that they're beautiful just the way that they are. And I constantly hear moms do it around their daughters. And I think that is such a bad message.
Thank you, Wendy. And we actually had an email from Megan, too, who said she's worried when other family members denigrate themselves in front of her young daughter because those young kids, even 5, 7 years old, they're picking up on that.
Right. One of the ways we develop our body image is through identification, through identifying with our mother. Even more now, also, I mean, second behind is father. Because a lot of men are more concerned about their body image now. But it's really important. I mean, it's hard to be in midlife and be female and feel totally confident in your body. There's just so many messages out there, not only for your daughters, but for you too, that you don't measure up, you have to look this way, not that way. But it's really important not to talk about that around your daughters. If you want to talk to a friend about it when your kids aren't around, if you want to see a therapist, whatever. But it is really important not to talk about it because girls internalize that and it becomes part of their body image. Instead, it's important to really try to focus on your own signature strengths. We all have certain strengths. We might have beautiful eyes, great legs, an athletic body. Focus on your signature strengths, what are natural to you. Take care of them. Enjoy them. Find fabrics and colors that you feel fabulous in. And but do not say that because they get into that. And again, fathers are now starting to play a role too because they too are getting more concerned about their shape and weight.
Well, and I was going to say, while we are kind of focusing on the young ladies, the young girls, that boys are just as susceptible to these issues, especially in this day and age, and men as well. 24 million people in the United States do suffer from some type of eating disorder, and they're not all female. Now, we were talking about mothers and older influences, but I had Sally who called and has an older daughter who's thin and athletic, trying to control the younger daughter as far as eating and body shape. How does a parent deal with when the siblings are kind of promoting this poor body image?
So you're saying the older daughter is trying to control her younger?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think absolutely you have to sit down and talk to her about that because that's not okay. To me, that's like a form of bullying around body. And so I think it's really important to maybe try to talk with your daughter. Why is she doing that? Talk about how it's affecting her sister. And set some boundaries and say, this kind of talk cannot go on in our house. And if your daughter becomes more and more obsessed with this, she may need some help with it.
Cincinnati Edition on 91.7, 513-419-7100, or email talk at wvxu.org. Two questions here, very, very close together. One, Jen called, what do you look for if you think a friend has anorexia signs? And another along the same lines, Ben, who emailed and says, if you think your daughter has a problem, she just won't eat, where do you start to help her? What are the signs that you can pick up? Because often, as Stephen's been talking about, when it comes to the online conversations that go on, there's a lot of anonymity and a lot of denial and a lack of disclosure, I guess you could say. So, Stacey, Doctor, please, what do you look for? What can you look for? And what should you be worried about?
Well, I'm going to let Anne speak with more clinical accuracy. But I think that when anyone starts to isolate, switch behaviors, that when activities change and with mood change and attitude changes, I think it's very easy to dismiss it as some sort of adolescent or teen rite of passage that can go on for a really long time, but those are certainly signs that that you need to pay more attention as an adult. And Anne can speak to anything more specific than that around eating disorders.
Right. I mean, first of all, like with anorexia and often bulimia, you're going to see your daughter losing weight. You may, with bulimia, find, thing, all sorts of candy bars or binge food that are in a big garbage bag in their closet or something like that. And also with overeating, because that's also an eating disorder. I think, you know, you're going to see an increase in weight, and often again, because of the shame, food hidden. I mean, also you will see often a change in mood. I think you'll see more withdrawal from friends and activities. And also things like if they can't do their exercise that they do, that they have off the top reaction, if they can't go run or they can't do something. And again, what this is about is that exercise is regulating their emotion. And so they don't know how to regulate it themselves, and that's where they need help. But the exercise is regulating it. And so when you're saying, you know, you're really just you're running too much, the reaction's so over the top that you realize this isn't just about running. And when often the other part of, I think, an eating disorder is there's often lying involved, you know, about how much they ate during the day at lunch, all that type of things.
513-419-7100, Cincinnati Edition here on 91.7. And with all these influences, I you know, as a parent of a daughter, I look at the challenges that we face, because it seems like between what Stephen's talking about happening online and on the internet, what we see in media and the ever, you know, gaining exposure every day to more and more different media, that this seems like an uphill battle. I mean, what is there a positive side to look at this, to how we can raise awareness and try to help these young people who are having these eating disorders? I mean, what it seems daunting to be facing the internet and mass media. What can we do to try to, with our children, and instill the right, you know, encouragement?
I would say that there's families and communities who can create a culture around service-oriented activities, going to parks, having picnics. There needs to be replacement activities that support connection, that support healthy activity that isn't around weight loss. Because when the mind and body get stuck, the muscles of the body, the hormones, the chemicals are all in this self-destructive loop. And one of the surefire ways to change that is to promote different activities. And I feel like it doesn't have to be tricky. It doesn't have to be yoga camp. It can just be taking a walk after dinner with your family, laughing, having rituals of talking about what was the best thing that happened today and what was the most challenging thing. Super simple, integrative activities that help connect, reconnect young people to broader communities.
And yet also a lot of that requires parental involvement and vigilance on the parents' part. Today, parents often are both working, and it's hard to spend quality time with your family. And so if you're leaving your children for long periods on their own, I think that's just a breeding ground for them to sort of get into some of these things, online or otherwise.
Well, and I think that several years ago, the average number of hours a week that young people were spending receiving media messages was 40 hours a week. So, and it has escalated considerably with handheld devices, laptops, iPads, et cetera. So if your young person is receiving 80 plus hours of media a week, it really is rewiring the brain in ways I don't even think we've seen all of the devastation of just way too much dopamine and other sorts of seeking obsessive activities. So yeah, it takes a village, but it also takes strong families, which is why True Body tries to open up a lot of its classes to women and girls, all generations, because we need self-care to care. It's tricky.
A lot of nodding going on. Doctor, you want to add to this? Because it is. I mean, I saw a recent study that says on average, today's teenagers have 4 to 7 hours each day online and only 4 to 7 minutes of outdoor activities. And I'd say that's walking from school to the car or to the store. Like, do you have anything to add here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you could do a whole show on this. But I think that we really have to stop and think about what's going on with all this texting. And, you know, it's not unusual for me to have an adolescent I'm treating come in crying and say, my boyfriend broke up with me. He texted me. And, you know, there's value to people sitting down together that have been boyfriend, girlfriend, talking to each other. One person might cry. The other person feels some empathy for them. They talk it through. It's awkward, but it's part of the human condition, and there's value to that. But when you just text somebody or you just cut somebody off your Facebook, I think it leads to, again, kids not feeling that attached and the richness of attachment, and not valuing other people enough and their feelings and thoughts. And so I feel like it's so important in your own family to really try to be empathetic towards each other, to be curious, to talk to each other. The other thing I think is, you know, talk about these images you see on TV. There's all sorts of, on the internet, you know, pieces that show all the photoshopping that goes on and things like that. And, you know, it's important to let them know this is not what real people look like. If you want to know what real people look like, go to the mall and just sit for a little while. You're going to see people all different shapes, sizes, ethnicities, everything. And I think the other thing is real important is to teach skills to be effective, because for many of these girls, this is where they feel the most effective. Their parents might have divorced and they didn't feel control of that. And their mother might have remarried and they're not happy about that. But this is how they feel effective, because they're the thinnest girl in 10th grade. And so it's like really helping them find effectiveness outside of body shape and weight.
Chris from Lebanon, you're on Cincinnati Edition. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to address the fact that my daughter, who's had an eating disorder for 9 years, she's 22 at this point, out of the home, and we can tell by the way she acts that she's having a spiral down period. And we try to say, we can see you're having a hard time, talk to us, and she'll get belligerent. Can you give some help to people with older children who already been through rehab 3 times, are smart enough to know how to beat the system? Help us.
Okay, yeah, that is quite a daunting challenge. Because, you know, you love your daughter so much, it must be so painful to watch her going through this and for 9 years. Yeah, I think the most important thing is to try to meet with her alone, and to talk with her about how you love her and you are concerned. And I would be specific, like, I noticed you didn't eat anything at the picnic. It looks like you've lost weight. And then I think I would just say, could you teach me how to help you? How can I help you right now? Can you teach me? So I think that often the patient who's struggling so hard with this, instead of being defensive, might be able to open up and teach you. You know, they might say, could you watch the kids on a certain day so I can go and just read all afternoon, or could you go with me to my first therapy appointment? But I would say, can you teach me?
In fact, that really speaks to the social support research, which says we have to ask people what they find supportive. We can't assume that we know what people need. We have to actually have communication and conversations with them, and that's often the most enlightening.
Well, I thank you all for being here. I'm sorry that we're out of time, but I appreciate your time and your thoughts on this very serious issue. Thank you for being on Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stacey Sims is the founder of the True Body Project. Psychologist and author Dr. Ann Carney Cook is with the Cincinnati Psychotherapy Institute. And Stephen Haas, who did that study on online negative enabling support groups. Fascinating stuff. You can learn more about on our website, wvxu.org, have all been my guests this afternoon. And thanks also to Sarah Young, and good luck with her recovery and her advocacy as she continues. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Details about archives and stories for Cincinnati Edition stories at WVXU.org. Technical director for today's show was Rick Andres. Producer was Pete Reitmeier, with help from Kevin Reynolds. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Purzel. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned. It's Here and Now coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.